So, in any case, Devananda Pandit was a great reciter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he had practically memorized the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. So every day he was giving Bhagavatam class, and this was at Navadvipa, of course, and before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested his pastimes. So one day, Srivas Thakur, who was Narada Muni, was walking by the Bhagavatam class of Devananda Pandit, and by hearing the Bhagavatam, this is called a vibhava. A vibhava means that which excites you. Just like nowadays, people see the coming attraction or the new film, the new Star Wars film. Anyway, people get excited and then they run to the theater, right? There's different things that excite us. Like the ladies, they look at the shoes in the shoe store, and that's their vibhavas, right? And anyway, some people look at computers, and they become excited with looking at computers. So when one is actually Krishna conscious, anything that reminds them of Krishna, whether it's Krishna directly, or it's something connected with Krishna, like a lotus flower, or peacock feather, or the temple, or something like that, that excites them so much that basically they go into uncontrollable ecstasy. And of course, Narottama Das Thakur prays for that day when we will experience it. Of course, he is always experiencing that. In his prayer, Goranga Valite Havi Pulaka Sharir. When I chant the name Gauranga, will I feel the hairs of my body stand on end? Hari Hari Nayani Bhavi Nir. When will the eyes be tinged with tears of love of God when I hear the name Gauranga? And also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kavi Havi Bolo, Se Dinamar, Aparada Guche, Namaruchi. So when will that day be mine? And the devotee should hanker for that. That is actually the goal, to have a taste for hearing and chanting, just like today is Ekadasi, so it's a special day to pray to Krishna to get a taste, instead of a taste for these mundane things, society and friendship, love, all these things that are just simply temporary. Nasato vijite bhavo nabhavo vijite sadha ubiyarapi drishnavantas 20-osapadarshvi. In that sense, they're actually unreal. Because they're just here today, gone tomorrow. Like that Christian song, life's a fading flower, here today, gone tomorrow, a fragrance in the wind, a wave tossed in the ocean. So these things are all just so temporary, just one wave. It's like the surfers, the sufferers, they're actually trying to ride the waves. And they get one perfect wave, but what happened to that wave once it's gone? It's finished. So we're trying to ride the waves of material energy. Anyway, so we should aspire for having this sort of taste where you go into ecstasy, just seeing or hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam that's going on. And of course, nowadays, people are sleeping in the Bhagavatam. So in the early days of the movement, the attendance was quite good in the Bhagavatam class because everyone was living in the temple. That's understandable. And we were forced to get up. But nowadays, life has changed. Life has changed. But at least people could watch in their homes. Wait. We got quite a few people, more than 10 people watching this morning. So Srivas Thakur, when he heard the Bhagavatam going on and heard about the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes or Krishna's devotees' pastimes or the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, he fell into ecstasy. And he dropped to the ground and started rolling. And what happened is that Devananda Pandit's disciples thought, hey, this is a disturbance during Bhagavatam class. Just like I was disturbed with the cutting of the flowers. There's the cutting of the flowers is not an ecstatic symptom of love of God. It's devotional service, but you know, sometimes it's devotional service, if they're done too loudly, are not appropriate Bhagavatam-wise. So anyway, getting back to the point. So he fell to the ground, Devananda Pandit's disciples got very disturbed, and they basically got very angry with him and kicked him out. So Devananda Pandit didn't do this, but his disciples did that. So when disciples do something under the vision of the spiritual master doesn't correct them, he has to suffer. Because he allowed it to happen. That's the point. I mean, it's not that the spiritual master is responsible for everything the disciple does if he has no control over it. But right in front of him, then, you know, he really is responsible and has to suffer. That's the point of taking responsibility. When one is a king, one is a temple president, or one is a spiritual master, any sort of guardian or parent, one has to be responsible for the actions of one's disciples or children or people that work under you. Just like you see in these different corporations where there's some disaster, then sometimes the president, even though he didn't do anything wrong, has to resign. The president or CEO or chief financial officer has to resign because he's held responsible. Anyway, so therefore, Devananda Pandit was held responsible, and he sort of lost his taste for hearing and chanting. Of course, he continued to recite Srimad Bhagavatam. Sometime later, many years later, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going through Navadvip, and he came by the class of Devananda Pandit's, and Lord Chaitanya said this. This is a very interesting Chaitanya Bhagavat quotation. What does this fellow know about the meaning described in the Bhagavatam? He will never know the Bhagavatam, even in many, many lifetimes. The Bhagavatam is the literary avatar of Krishna himself. The Bhagavatam promotes bhakti as the ultimate goal of life. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya explained the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he said, an irreligious person who rejects bhakti and finds some other meaning in the Srimad Bhagavatam will never understand the Bhagavatam. Of course, what he was criticizing was the improper treatment of Srivas Thakur, because, as we know, there's a person Bhagavat and a book Bhagavat, so they're not different. So if you read the Bhagavatam and try to understand the Bhagavatam, you mistreat the devotee Bhagavat, then you'll never understand the book Bhagavat. They both have to be taken together. You can't have one without the other. You have to have book Bhagavat and person Bhagavat. So he was very, very angry. Lord Chaitanya was extremely angry. Of course, he described that he was soft as a rose and hard as a thunderbolt sometimes. But his hardness as a thunderbolt was his extreme mercy towards the conditioned souls. So anyway, so Lord Chaitanya spoke so many truths that Devananda Pandit didn't complain at this time. He just thought, you know, that's just that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, he's a fanatic. And so after some time, Lord Chaitanya did something that got him a little bit more respect, which is he took sannyas. And we were talking about this in one of the programs we did recently. The program, you know, what is the need for sannyas in Kali Yuga? And I was explaining, of course, from that quote, that in Kali Yuga several things are forbidden. Taking sannyas is forbidden. Gomeda, Ashwamedha, a brother having a child with his brother's wife, you know, all these things are forbidden in Kali Yuga. So then they were saying, you know, why be a sannyasi? You know, what's the need of sannyas? You know, such a dangerous position to be in a sannyasi. So I explained that in the Indian culture, that is the Vedic culture too, that someone in the renounced order of life is given some special respect. And that special respect is there, not so that someone can become proud of one's particular position or erudition, but the special respect is given so that someone can preach and people will listen. And we see this in Indian culture. Of course, in the West, it doesn't make a bit of difference. You can go to the University of North Carolina and tell people you're a sannyasi, and they'll say, you know, who cares? And they may see even as a little strange that sannyasis don't get married. And sometimes people even ask, why can't women take sannyas? That's another statement too. And the reason women can't take sannyas is, first of all, the most important thing is that women have to be protected. It's a Vedic culture that ladies should be protected, and ladies are, you know, just wandering around the world from one place to another. It's not protection. You know, people take advantage of ladies. We just have to be honest about the world, isn't it? I mean, it's like I've been speaking to several people about how many ladies, when they were young, were mistreated, or let's say even abused. And it turns out to be something like 80 to 90%, even in India. I mean, it's just, I mean, of course, many boys are abused too, but it's a higher percentage. So the girls, the women have to be protected. And of course, the Vedic culture was done in a very, almost like an extreme way. I wouldn't say extreme in a negative sense, but, you know, they were highly protected. Just like Prabhupada said, his mother would not go out unless she was in a palanquin being carried by four men. Pretty good. Of course, we can't do that nowadays. Can't have the ladies in palanquins. Of course, Krishna Priya is light enough, so easy to carry the palanquin. So some of the other ladies might be a little harder. So anyway, so this is the culture. This is actually a very, very important culture. So Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, and then Devananda Pandit realized after hearing about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and taking sannyas, I commit an offense against a great personality, against Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, but he had the opportunity, Devananda Pandit had the opportunity to rectify the offense that he committed to Srivast Thakur, and he rectified that in his relationship with another devotee, Vrikeshwara Pandit. Vrikeshwara Pandit was known as I think it was an incarnation of Aniruddha or something like that in Krishna's pastime. But anyway, he was known as a great dancer. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said he danced so well that one time he danced for 72 hours without stopping. I mean, sometimes they have these books of different records. What is that called? That the book of records? Guinness Book of Records. Well, he would have been in the Guinness Book of Records. 72 hours without stopping or eating or anything like that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that if he had two devotees like Vrikeshwara Pandit, then he would have two wings and he could fly in the sky. So therefore, one day, Vrikeshwara Pandit was dancing and he was surrounded by a big crowd. And Devananda Pandit was thinking, you know, he's going to get hurt or someone's going to run into him. So he, with his cane, he formed a circle around Vrikeshwara Pandit so no one would interfere with Vrikeshwara Pandit's dancing. And because of that service to Vrikeshwara Pandit, then later on, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very pleased with him and forgave Devananda Pandit. And gave Devananda Pandit some very interesting instructions. And those instructions were as follows. Listen carefully, O Brahmana. Always praise Srimad Bhagavatam. Understand that there's no other explanation of Bhagavatam other than bhakti, other than pure devotional service. And that's how you should explain it. Just like we discovered in our analysis of the Bhagavad Gita, where we were counting out how many verses were in this particular subject matter, talking about the different topics or the different siddhantas, tattvas in the Bhagavad Gita, such as time and karma and jiva and the supreme personality of Godhead. We came up with a sixth topic, which they don't teach you about in Bhakti Shastri classes, unfortunately. And that topic is bhakti. I mean, they mentioned the five different topics of the Bhagavad Gita, time and karma, the living entity, the Supreme Personality of God in the material world. Well, I found the sixth topic, which is actually most of the verses of the Bhagavad Gita, which is bhakti. It's interesting, isn't it? And if I was to take the Bhakti Shastri test and I would come up with that topic, I'd probably get a bad score or something like that. So it's important to use your intelligence when studying Prabhupada's books and not just go by, rote learning, try to repeat certain things. Anyway, that's another subject matter. So then Lord Chaitanya explained that Bhagavatam is not a material creation. You should serve the devotees. He said, previously, O Brahman, you committed an offense to the lotus feet of Srivasa Pandit. You must go to him and beg forgiveness at his lotus feet. There's no difference between exactly what I said before. This is a quote from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's no difference between the book Bhagavat and the Bhakta Bhagavat. If you get the mercy of the Bhakta Bhagavat, then you will easily attain the mercy of the book Bhagavat. Very interesting statement. So then he went, Devananda Pandit went to Srivasa Thakur and begged for forgiveness, and they embraced each other, and they lived happily ever after in Krishna consciousness. Happy story. Okay, we'll go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. We have a few minutes. So today we're reading from the 16th text of the third chapter of the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narani Chanda Che Ushmapaya Tat Shobha Vispurjita Manasaya Naishkarmya Lavena Vivarjita Gava Swayam Prakashaya Namas Karomi Gunarani Chana Chit Ushmapaya Manasaya Nayishkarmyabhavena Vivarjitagama Swayam Prakashaya Namaskaromi Shobha Vispurjita Manasaya Swayam Shobha Vispurjita Manasaya
Shobha Vispurjita Manasaya. Svayam prakashaya namaskaromi.
Okay. Guna. By the three gunas, the modes of material nature, Tattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Arani, by the Arani wood. Channa, covered. Chit, of knowledge. Ushmapaya, at he who's fire. Takshoba, of the agitation of the modes of material nature. This purjita, outside. Manasaya, unto he whose mind. Naishkarmya bhavena, because of the stage of spiritual understanding. Vivarjita, and those who give up. Agama, Vedic principles. Swayam, personally. Prakashaya, unto he who is manifest. Namakaromi, I offer my respectful obeisances. Translation, my Lord, as the fire in a rani wood is covered, you and your unlimited knowledge are covered by the material modes of nature. Your mind, however, is not attentive to the activities of the modes of nature. Those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge are not subject to the regulative principles directed in the Vedic literatures. Because such advanced souls are transcendental, you personally appear in their pure minds. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So you can repeat. My Lord, as the fire in a rani wood is covered, you and your unlimited knowledge are covered by the material modes of nature. Your mind, however, is not attentive to the activities of the modes of nature. Those who are advanced in spiritual knowledge are not subject to the regulative principles directed in the Vedic literatures. Because such advanced souls are transcendental, you personally appear in their pure minds. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, 11th text, it is said, Tesham Nebanu Kampartam Aham Magyana Jam Damaha Nashami Yatma Bhavasto Gyanati Pena Vashvata. For a devotee who has taken the lotus feet of the Lord within his heart, the Lord gives spiritual enlightenment, known as Jnanadipa, by special mercy from within. This Jnanadipa is compared to the fire hidden within Arani wood. To perform fire sacrifices, great sages previously did not ignite a fire directly. The fire would be invoked from Arani wood. Similarly, all living entities are covered by the modes of material nature. And the fire of knowledge can be ignited only by the Supreme Personality of Godhead when one takes him within one's heart. So, Zavai Mana, Krishna, Vidara Vindayaho. If one takes seriously the lotus feet of Krishna who is seated within one's heart, the Lord eradicates all ignorance. By the torch of knowledge, one immediately understands everything properly by the special mercy of the Supreme Lord and becomes self-realized. In other words, although a devotee may externally not be very well educated, because of his devotional service, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives him enlightenment from within. If the Lord gives enlightenment from within, how can one be in ignorance? Therefore, the allegation of the Mayavadis that the devotional path is for the unintelligent or uneducated is untrue. Yashasti Bhaktir Bhagavati Kinchana Saravaya Gunas Tatra Samasate Suraha Bhagavatam 5th Canto, 18th Chapter, Text 12. If one becomes an unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Lord, he automatically manifests all good qualities. Such a devotee is above the instructions of the Vedas. He is a Paramahansa. Even without going through the Vedic literature, a devotee becomes pure and enlightened by the mercy of the Lord. Therefore, my Lord, the devotee says, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So, Kudharane chana chir ushmapaya tachoba vispurjit manasaya naishkarmya bhavena vivarjitagama swayam prakashaya namas karomi saumagana timananda shat shakya chasur meditam yena tasmai shi yurveda maha. So, this is very interesting. Let's take the word ignorance. So the word ignorance, which Prabhupada mentions here, because most of us are in ignorance, of course that's referring to a mode of nature. But if you really analyze that word in English, it means to ignore something. To ignore something that you should be aware of. Just like sometimes if someone is really obnoxious, I ignore them. So if someone is envious of Krishna, they ignore Krishna. That's called Krishna Bahir Mukha. That's our position. Bahir Mukha means we turn our face away from Krishna. Mukha means face. Bahir means outside. Just like we chant to Lord Nishingane, Bahir Nishino, Ridaye Nishino, right? That Lord Nrisimha is outside and he's inside. He's in the heart and he's outside. He's everywhere. So when we say Bahir Mukha, Krishna Bahir Mukha, means we put Krishna outside. Not that Krishna isn't outside. He's outside, he's inside, he's in the heart. We understand that. But we put him to the side. And that's ignorance. So in other words, Krishna is there. Everywhere, like Prabhupada would say sometimes, like the miracle is if someone doesn't see Krishna. The miracle is not someone that can see Krishna, is that one doesn't see Krishna. So Krishna is everywhere. So anyway, the process of Krishna consciousness is something like waking up. That's the example that Prabhupada gave. And of course, the waking up process is a process of cleansing or igniting the fire, just like Prabhupada gives the example, or the Bhagavatam gives the example of Arani wood, that you don't need a match to ignite Arani wood. I remember many times devotees, in order to impress people when they were doing a fire sacrifice, not that they would use Arani wood, but they would put some electric igniter in the fire and make believe that they were by mantra starting the fire, you know, like a traditional Vedic fire where you don't have any matches. They go swaha, and push the button under their seat. Lord. So anyway, so the same way, like you don't need matches in order to start the fire with the running wood, then you don't need anything external in order to understand Krishna, because Krishna is there in your heart. You just need to cleanse the heart. Of course, that's our process, which is Chaito Darpana Marjanam, the first verse in the Shikshastaka, that the heart is dirty. And the dirt has been accumulated for many births within the material world. And that's why we don't see Krishna. And of course, don't blame the dirt. You wanted the dirt. It's like a boy who plays in mud. And the parent wants to clean the child, and the child is just interested in playing in the mud. The child enjoys that very much. So we want the dirt. We're attached to the dirt. Imagine being attached to dirt. But children are sometimes. They're attached to dirt. So we're in that state of consciousness that we're attached to the dirt in the heart. And the chanting cleanses this dirt in the heart, and it, or another example Prabhupada gives is the mirror of the mind, dirt of the heart, mirror of the mind, and then one is able to perceive reality. And it's like waking up in the morning, another example Prabhupada gave. It's like when you set the alarm clock, it's sound vibration. It makes some sound. And I mean, just like last night, I woke up in the middle of the night because my computer made some sound. I had it on all night because I was downloading a file. So by sound vibration, I woke up. But if someone shined a light into the room, I would have never woken up. So with a sound vibration, you wake up, and then you automatically remember who you are. And it's not like another point Prabhupada made. It's not an artificial imposition of the mind. It's simply reminding you who you are and who Krishna is. That's it. And so therefore, when we preach Krishna consciousness, we don't have to just like impose upon people who Krishna is or what spiritual life is. We have to facilitate them in waking up. That's preaching Krishna consciousness. Not that we just say, you know, I just bombard them with every aspect of the philosophy. Of course, we can tell them they're not the body. I mean, of course, it's mentioned as one of the offenses in chanting to preach the glories of the holy name to those who are faithless. So you have to be really careful what you present to people, like we experienced that in Krishna West. You know, you can't. Sometimes you can't even mention the word God. They just get upset. If you have God, or you can say supreme person, or the most beautiful person, or attractive person, like that. But so what you do is you engage people in chanting somehow or other. Like we have our process where we sit down, everyone sits down together and chants one round together. And then they wake up. And we see that. And even in spite of trying to be Krishna West, you know, West, we find when people wake up, they come to the temple. You know, I was speaking to one girl, you know, Elaine, who's, and the devotees wouldn't even let her come to the temple. Yeah, in the beginning. They were just like, she was chanting, why can't I come to the temple? Well, everything's closed. And finally, you know, by chanting her desire to see the deities, you know. So even in Krishna West, where we're trying to keep people like westernized, you know, keep them away from the saris and keep them away from everything like that, they tend to gravitate towards the temple. You can't really keep it separate, because as soon as one gets purified by the chanting of the holy name, you become attracted to things that are even against you, different than your own culture. Because it's not a question that we're simply presenting, let's say, an Indian culture here, that Krishna's all attractive, all the things surrounding Krishna are attractive. Anyway, on that happy note, that's our experience. Chant Hare Krishna and you'll be free and serve the Lord eternally. Yeah. Okay. Radhika Lokananda ki jai.